Are you getting pressure from finance to justify or reduce your cloud bill? Cloud Zero is the only cloud cost platform loved by engineers and trusted by finance. Cloud Zero can identify unused, idle, or over-provisioned resources, alert you to spend anomalies, and organize 100% of your spend into a framework that mirrors your business structure, like cost per customer, product feature, or team. It's the most powerful platform ever built to provide accurate, granular visibility into your total cloud spend, without the typical pitfalls of legacy cloud cost management tools like endless tagging or clunky Kubernetes support. Manage cost, optimize development, and maximize profit all in one platform. Join companies like Rapid7, Drift, and SeatGeek by visiting cloudzero.com/cloudcast to get started. That's cloudzero.com/cloudcast. Visit today to experience immediate and ongoing savings on your cloud bill.
Cloudcast Media presents from the Massive Studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from our massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it is Aaron for Cloud News this week. And I'll just say this real quick ahead of time. I am heading off to Boston for Red Hat Summit. So I'm actually doing Cloud News a little early this week. So if anything super big happens in the news on Monday or Tuesday before you listen to this on Wednesday, sorry about that, because I'm actually recording this on Sunday. But here we go. Let's dive right into Cloud News this week. First of all, for our first article, and I think we saw this one coming for a while now, but ServiceNow is actually partnering with NVIDIA to develop, as they call it, super specialized generative AI. And what exactly does that mean? Well, we kind of saw this coming with the rise of infrastructure as code and how to drive efficiencies, especially for IT organizations in the enterprise. Well, it just makes sense that we're going to start to see generative AI that is specialized to IT professionals and IT functions within an organization. And according to, you know, it didn't really go into a lot of detail on exactly what they're going to be doing, but they did announce it at their Knowledge 23 conference, and they will be partnering with NVIDIA to do NVIDIA software, services, and infrastructure as well. So looking for more details on that, and we will probably start to see first of many of something to come. For our second story, New Relic. New Relic is, and this is a rumors and speculation one, potentially going to be selling to PE, and rumors are somewhere around $5 to $6 billion sale to PE. And why would they do something like that? Well, I mean, they've been public for a number of years now, but they've been shifting their model to subscription based model, and it's been a little rocky. And the revamping of the business model, they missed a couple of quarters, and missing a couple of quarters, they brought in some new leadership. The new leadership is starting to turn things around. But this is the kind of thing when, you know, you're having to do these things in public, it doesn't always turn out the way you want it to when you have to report quarterly on top of that. So it might go well for them. It might be a really good route for them to go PE for a little while. They're probably potentially undervalued right now. PE can take them inside. They don't have to worry about it. They don't have to publish quarterly, and then they can come out the backside of it. And PE, of course, makes money on it in the meantime. So I certainly wish them the best. And like I said, that may or may not be happening, and we'll certainly follow up on that in the future. And lastly, for our third article, and this is one we reported on after Detroit as well. I guess we can call this a regular staple of the show now. Article came out about the analyzing all the booths at KubeCon and what were some of the trends we saw. And now we also have not just the trends that at Detroit show, but also at Amsterdam. And then you can compare and contrast them, which ones, you know, stayed the same, which ones went up, which ones went down. The short version of all of this, and actually, I was really surprised by this at Amsterdam. Cost, I feel like cost was all over the place in Detroit. But it actually, if you go look at the booths and the wording of the booths, it didn't score nearly as high in Detroit, actually, as it did in Amsterdam. But a number of the others, you know, if I kind of just go through the top ones here in Amsterdam, cloud Kubernetes platform. And by the way, platform went up dramatically. Security, data, native observability, and security. So I don't think that's probably a surprise to anybody, but it is a really interesting dissection of the data and the analysis that you can get just off of something as simple as going and walking the show floor. So I really found that article informative. And with that, I'm going to wrap up Cloud News for this week. Coming up right after the break, we're actually going to be talking about an upcoming event, PlatformCon. We're going to be talking with Luca Galante, head of product at Humanitech and PlatformCon organizer.
Today's sponsor is Datadog, a real-time monitoring platform that unifies metrics, logs, and distributed traces from your cloud containers and orchestration software. Datadog's container-centric monitoring features allow you to track the health and performance of your dynamic container environment. The container map provides a bird's-eye view of your container fleet, and the live container view searches, groups, and filters your containers with any criteria, like tags, pods, or workspaces. To start monitoring your container clusters, sign up for a free trial today, and Datadog will send you a free t-shirt. Visit datadog.com/container-cloudcast to get started. That's datadog.com/container-cloudcast.
And we're back. And for our show this week, we want to talk about a really exciting event that's coming up. But also, what we wanted to do is give everyone a little bit of an update on the status of platform engineering in general. When back in January, we do our look-ahead shows. And one of, if not the most popular show this year, was the topic of platform engineering. And so today we have Luca Galante, works in product at Humanitech, but also PlatformCon organizer. So first of all, Luca, welcome to the show. And how did you get involved in platform engineering, and how did PlatformCon come into being?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me, Aaron. So as you said, I lead product at Humanitech, and you know, over there we build a toolbox effectively for platform teams to build their internal developer platforms, which is, well, you know, the sort of the end product of a platform engineering initiative and organization. And you know, back 3 years ago, we started building Humanitech because we had been you know, involved in different sort of like internal platform initiatives at various large companies. And so we came together and tried to put together a product that could help other companies do the same, that maybe didn't have the same level of resources or time to you know, drop on a platform initiatives like maybe, you know, a Spotify or an Airbnb would. And when we did that, we realized that there were other companies and other people, other organizations like us that were doing similar things. But there was just like a lack of, you know, shared framework to think about these things, right? So people have been building platforms, as far as I'm concerned, for the last, you know, 5 to 10 years in some cases. But there was really just no clear definition of what is this called? What are we doing? What is best practice? And so that's really kind of how we start thinking about, you know, bringing together this community, for, you know, us as platform engineers to really have like sounding boards and understand what are the best approaches. And then be obviously as Humanitech to, you know, have an initial feedback on the products that we were building. And so that's how we got going with the whole platform engineering community. And I think it became a really special place, specifically because it resonated with these, you know, senior practitioners that had been building platforms for the last decade or so. And I think for a lot of them, it was this big relief moment of like, oh, that's what I've been doing. that's what that's called. And then provide them with a place to, you know, come together, share war stories, best practices, and so on. And I think the, you know, that's what a lot of communities do. But I think the platform engineering community also has this added layer of almost providing an identity and really this kind of like framework for thinking about, you know, their role and what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. And you know, the way these communities started was really through events. That's in the kind of like DNA of the community, specifically virtual events, because we started during COVID, so we couldn't really do any in-person events. So we started with a small meetup group in Berlin that, again, literally was started, I think, a month or two before COVID hit. And so quickly went to virtual, and then it quickly grew to a bunch of outer groups all over Europe and then North America. And now we have, I think, something like 28 groups all over the world, over 13,000, I believe, members globally. And the, you know, the kind of like the short succession from there to platform calling was that maybe three quarters into the meetup groups existing, we figured, okay, how can we provide people with a, you know, different way of connecting that is not a one-to-many, like in an event, but a many-to-many sort of relationship. And that's when we launched a Slack channel, which was extremely well received, not just by the existing team members, but also from a lot of, you know, quote-unquote famous DevOps and cloud native people that and that kind of pushed us to fast track than this idea that we had been playing around with, which was platform calling effectively. And so we launched a Slack, and about a month later we launched the first website of platform calling, and then it took place for the first time last year in June 2022, and had, you know, 6,000 attendees and about 80 talks from a lot of different speakers and some of the biggest names in the space. And so kind of about a year and a half of journey from the beginning of the community and the meetup groups to PlatformCon V1 taking place.
I like that, referring to it as V1. And so it's really interesting. You said a key phrase there that really resonated with me, and that was providing an identity to something, because that is, I really think like platform engineering is kind of having its moment right now. And there's been a lot, there's a lot written about it, and there's a lot of customers, companies, vendors that are all kind of jumping on board. And I think one of the big reasons for this is, you know, a lot of times we see in our space, a solution, you know, really looking for a problem, you know, kind of starting right. Everything backwards. But in this instance, there's a problem. A lot of people have had it. A lot of people have had it for a long time, but no one knew quite what to call it. And do you think that's kind of the origin of how this all happened so quickly? I feel like platform engineering really developed momentum much faster than, you know, I want to use the term technologies, but it's more really of a solution and an idea, correct? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, 100%. The way I think about platform engineering is as a discipline. Ultimately what it is, it's really about taking the different sort of like technologies and tooling that you have, usually in enterprise engineering org. All this stuff that's like sort of floating around and makes it complicated for a developer to just deploy a simple change to their code to a dev or a product environment. It's about taking all of this and kind of binding it together into golden paths that enable developer self-service while reducing cognitive load on the individual contributor and the developer. And the kind of like the superset of this golden path is, you know, what we refer to in the community as the internal developer platform, or IDP. I think it's the funny thing about how I think it really exploded last year, specifically, I think Q3, Q4 of 22, it was through a bunch of different things that happened at the same time. But one of the kind of biggest, I think, most viral moment was the DevOps is Dead campaign that we ran, actually. I think it's really funny in a way, because the truth is, you know, obviously DevOps is Dead is a very catchy phrase, and it got a lot of people mad and You know, I think it.
Sure.
and I think it, but it also started a very important conversation in the industry, in the space, that I think was really needed. And you know, I think it. But if you take a step back and you think about what platform engineering is, right? Platform engineering really actually enables true DevOps at the enterprise scale in the cloud native era, right? And so if we take a step back, you know, DevOps was probably, came out probably like 15 years ago at this point, and in a world that was very, very different, right? We're still mainly developing on monoliths, maybe running on bare metal. The infrastructure was extremely less complex than it is right now, right? You didn't have Kubernetes, IAC. You didn't have 10,000 different tools in the CNCF landscape. And the initial idea behind DevOps was really great, right? Is basically you want to take down the barrier between developers and operations and facilitate collaboration between those two stakeholders. And so that's great. The issue is that, you know, in a lot of organizations that really meant shifting left onto developers, a lot of stuff, while at the same time you had this convergence of all these cloud native trends and technologies, right? So you had containerizations and Kubernetes, and you had GitOps, and, you know, add your cloud native buzzword du jour. And that, you know, made the actual reality of DevOps quite miserable for the vast majority of teams, because now all of a sudden, if I'm a developer, and again, let's take the case of I just want to deploy a simple code change to a dev environment. While when DevOps was first kind of thought of, deploying something meant touching a tool and a script. Now, all of a sudden, 10 years later, fast forward, and you have to, you know, touch maybe five different tools and two different Helm charts and three different IAC and Terraform modules. And then it just adds all this cognitive load, which is quite paralyzing for a lot of developers and for a lot of organizations. And so the end result of that is, you know, developers are basically blocked. They're waiting on their ops or DevOps colleagues to fix these things. And then the ops teams are effectively, you know, fighting this ticket ops reality on a daily basis. And there's just like a lot of friction and frustration in the system. And so, you know, the first companies that realized that this idea of DevOps was great in theory, but just wasn't scaling were, you know, this very large engineering organizations that I was talking about at the beginning, because they were the ones, you know, think about literally the Googles and Airbnbs and, you know, whatever of the world. And they like obviously were at the forefront of cloud native adoption. So their cloud native footprint was growing at a much faster pace than the average organization. And at the same time, they were also aggressively hiring, right? Like these companies literally added hundreds of developers a month in the last 10 years. And so if you combine these two things, they quickly realized, hey, I can't expect all this like hundreds of new hires to, you know, immediately be familiar with this increasingly complex cloud native setup that I'm running, right? It just doesn't make sense. It's not feasible. And so they figured I need to build some sort of platform layer here in between developers and operations to enable developer self-service and to reduce the pressure on the operations teams. And that's really where platform engineering started. And I think it's been slowly trickling down to kind of, you know, the mainstream and smaller and less advanced engineering organizations, right? And so if you look at it through that lens, you know, the irony of that campaign, of, you know, the DevOps is Dead campaign is that, you know, actually platform engineering enables true you build it, you run it, right? This idea of like shifting left and DevOps. But it does so at an enterprise scale and in a cloud native setup. And so through that lens, I really think of platform engineering as a necessary evolution of DevOps for, you know, for the reality that we have right now. And you know, I still think that it's important to have that conversation and realize, though, that there is a problem in DevOps today, and the solution, I think, is platform engineering.
Yeah, yeah. And so, Luca, let me kind of follow on there too, because I kind of see it from, okay, yeah, to break that down for a second, there's like the developer side of everything, there's the operation side of everything. The common concern, I guess I see when we do IDPs for developers, and this is the same as when PaaS was first introduced, you know, gosh, 10 plus years ago. One of the common concerns with PaaS was it's too opinionated, right? I can only use this versions and these libraries, and some developers, they don't want to use, you know, these versions or these tools, and they want to use something that is outside of the norms. And so, to use your own term, right, what we're doing is we're defining the golden pathways, but the developers sometimes don't want to use them, right? You're making things simpler, but also, quote unquote, locking them in all at the same time. And so, do you get that concern still a lot, or is that something that was just an early objection? What's your thoughts on the developer side with lock-in or, you know, an opinionated structure behind IDPs?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And, you know, that is really the difference, in my view, between a PaaS and an IDP, right? So PaaS, or platform as a service, you know, and probably the OG would be Heroku, was that you, you know, effectively the product team at the PaaS provider, e.g. Heroku in this case, would say, hey, my friends, I've figured out what is the minimum common denominator in terms of the right level of abstraction and the right level of context that I can, that that developers need. And boom, here you go. You can just like copy paste it and replicate it across different setups. And, you know, nowadays there are a lot of other PaaS vendors that are popping up left and right, with maybe, you know, more specific use cases like a Vercel or Netlify and stuff like that. And those are all great products, right? The thing though is, and you know, the kind of journey of Heroku as a company, I think, shows that really clearly. It just doesn't scale to the enterprise, right? It works as long as you have maybe 20, 30, 40 engineers, right? And then at some point, things start breaking because, as you said, you'll have different types of users, different types of developers that need different levels of context and different types of abstractions to work with, right? So as an example, a senior backend engineer, you know, if you just give them this very high level, very simplified ClickOps UI thing, they're going to be really mad at you, right? Because they're used to handle their, you know, pod specifications and their Helm charts and YAML files and so on. And they just feel like you remove control away from them, right? But, you know, similarly, if you have a junior front end, let's say, and they just want to deploy a test to, you know, a change to the front end and test it, they don't care whether they're deploying this to the EKS or GKE cluster. Frankly, they don't care whether they're running in Kubernetes at all, probably. And they shouldn't, you might argue. And so, you know, in that, you know, you need to have these different paths for different types of users. And I think that's really the key, one of the key insights and one of the key concepts that we advocate for in the community, which is platform as a product, right? So the idea that platform engineering really is an unopinionated toolbox, you know, that can contain both open source stuff like Argo, Flux, Backstage, right? And vendor stuff like Humanitech, for instance. And then a platform team can take this, this toolbox, this unopinionated toolbox, and go and build their own opinionated, you know, workflows and golden paths and platforms following a platform as a product methodology, right? Which really means listening to developers, right? So it's essential for a successful platform initiative to have a platform team that really has a very tight feedback loop with their developers, right? And constantly iterates on it. And I think that's one of the big, mindset shifts that needs to happen from existing infrastructure and DevOps teams that morph into platform engineering organizations, sometimes because of a top-down mandate, sometimes because of, you know, sort of like bottom-up necessity. But they need to really shift from, hey, I'm adding tools and I'm teaching developers to how to use them, which, you know, as you're adding a lot of tools and a lot of developers, again, doesn't scale. To, hey, I'm building a product that lets developers self-serve what they need from my infrastructure and cloud native setup to run their apps and services on their own. And that will mean different things for different organizations. And so that's why a PaaS approach fails, because, you know, it just doesn't give you enough flexibility to fine tune the right level of context that you want to provide to your developers.
Nice. I like that. And I'll kind of flip over and go to the upside of all of this. I feel like we're fast approaching this. Every hype cycle, if I use that term, eventually hits the dreaded trough of disillusionment. And, you know, with all the different technologies that have gone through over time here, and I feel like, you know, some of them they're getting a peak excitement right now, like Backstage as an example, right? As we move into the getting things done stage, and we start to move into like, hey, you have this thing and it's going to solve the problem and it's going to be awesome. Well, we go to implement it and just complexity gets in the way a lot of times. And I feel like, you know, Kubernetes, one of the big knocks is, of course, yeah, hey, it does a lot of things, but also, hey, it's super complex. Do you see this happening as well, of like it's a complexity layer on top of another complexity layer, and how do folks address that, and is there a longer term solution to either prevent and or get out of this trough of disillusionment as quickly as possible?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's about focusing on the right things, right? And you know, you brought up Backstage. I've worked really closely with the people over at Backstage, and now at a bunch of other sort of like portal providers that they're coming out. And I think it's a great product, but I do think that what I see a lot in the market that I've spoken a few times about this, and kind of as an anti-pattern of platform engineering, which is, you know, basically, yeah, kind of like running with the hype and not thinking about what are the problems that you're solving. And I think that's a very real risk of teams that basically just get blinded by the shiny new tech and shiny new things that come out, whether it's in platform engineering or else. And they, you know, they just kind of dive head first. And, you know, I mean, Kubernetes is a perfect example. 10 years ago, still is. It's kind of, all right, Kubernetes is going to solve all my problems. Well, it's probably going to make your situation a lot worse if you don't know what you're doing. And Backstage is a very similar thing, because, you know, and I've seen this a lot where there is a top-down decision from, you know, executive and C-level management in engineering org that says, hey, we need to improve developer experience. And everybody nods because, yeah, developer experience is important. And then they go, okay, well, what does developer experience mean, right? And you look at this chronologically. So they look at like, okay, well, a developer needs to, you know, create a new service and then does code changes and then deploys to dev, to production, and so on and so forth, right? And they look at this chronologically, and that's the anti-pattern, really, and they stop at the first step, right, which is like service creation. And then they hear about a portal like Backstage, and they're like, fantastic, Spotify was using this. It means it's probably really great for me, which is another anti-pattern, by the way. You're not Google, you're not Spotify, so be careful about, you know, following just the large companies blindly. And then they go and they implement Backstage, which, by the way, can, you know, be a 6 to 12 months implementation for an enterprise. And then they realize, oh, developers don't really use it. Because if you think about, you know, how often do you actually create a new service for, you know, end deployments? Not that often, right? I mean, if you are a huge streaming company like Spotify, probably often. But in the vast majority of engineering organizations, not really. And for some of it, some of them it might, you know, fully apply. For some others, not really. And so and for the majority, I think not really. And so then you end up with this thing, and which is again the result that effectively, A, you got sort of you just chased the hype, and then B, you didn't speak to your developers and you didn't listen to them, you didn't figure out really what is the pain they were trying to solve. And that's really where it goes back to this platform as a product approach. And I think as long as platform teams use that, it you know, and really focus on fixing where the pain is and just keep iterating on that, that's actually going to solve real real life problems. And you know, your platform engineering initiative is going to be quite successful, I think. And so in a way, you know, a heuristic to think about this is, you know, we have actually asked a lot of, you know, 1,000 plus engineering teams, okay, out of 100 deployments, right, how often do you do these things? And these things can be like a rollback or adding an environment variable or, you know, all these things, like creating a new service, spinning up a new environment and so on. And then we also ask them to try to attach a time to these things, right? So like how much time does it take on the dev side of things and how much time does it take to on the operation side of things? And so with that, you get a matrix out of it, which is really a very clear explanation of where you should focus, right? Because you can clearly see, okay, this is the thing that happens the most often and takes the most time. And that's the thing that I should solve first. And what we have seen over and over again is the pain point really in these increasingly complex cloud native setups is is configuration management, right? So it's how you handle all your infrastructure configurations. And this would be like your, for instance, your Terraform files, or you know, your IC modules and so on, or your application configuration files, like your Helm charts and your YAML files and stuff like that, right? And that's really where developers freeze, and they, you know, are often overwhelmed by the complexity, and I don't want to screw things up. I don't want to be touching this, you know, YAML file that I don't fully understand, yada yada. And that's where a lot of the congestion and the sort of the bottlenecks happen. And that's why, for instance, we focus on that as kind of like one of the core pain points that we solve with our platform orchestrator. But I think in general, that is the, you know, I think the approach that will determine whether your platform engineering initiative is just like a thing that follows the hype and is probably bound to fail versus is something that is solving real life problems and keeps iterating on it, which is that actually means you're getting the good stuff of the hype, right?
I like that. I like that. That's a fantastic way to summarize it all. Thank you. So Luca, let's talk about PlatformCon for a little bit. We talked about what is it earlier, but so how did 2022 go, and what are some of the lessons you're bringing into the 2023, which is the second iteration of PlatformCon, and what are some of the highlights for everyone that out there?
Yeah, so last year I think it was really interesting. The thing that really excited me about PlatformCon is the format, which is a little bit different than the majority, I think, of virtual events. You know, I feel like a lot of virtual events basically took the offline format and brought it online, which often results in a 8 hours long stream of 25 minutes back-to-back talks, and everybody wants to kill themselves. And instead, I stole an idea from a much smaller event that I attended at the beginning of 22, which was... And I adapted it to the community. And so what that means is we only have two live components each day. It is a 2 days conference. And we basically welcome people for 20 minutes for a European kickoff and then a North American kickoff later in the day. And then off you go, right? You can, it's completely async. You can take your kids to school, go to work, whatever, do live your life, and either follow along the stream of pre-selected talks that we queue up on the YouTube stream, or you can go and consume the talks on the YouTube, on the Platform Engineering YouTube channel, or on the PlatformCon's website. And then what we do is we crunch all the Q&A action in a 2-hour slot where all the speakers for that day hang out in the Platform Engineering Slack and just post, you know, you can think of, they post a link to their YouTube talk with if they're sort of like key takeaways and, hey, ask me anything. And what that does is it starts a frenzy of threads all over the Slack, which is super, super fun, super interesting. People are engaging with the speakers directly in the DMs, in the threads. There are speakers jumping on each other's threads and kind of cross-pollinating. So it's super fun and it's different, you know, and it leverages the existing assets of the community, if you will, right? So the other issue, I think, with a lot of virtual events is they have this kind of cold start problem where it's a bit awkward, right? Like you're listening to talks and there's not really a good way to engage. And maybe you're putting together in this like, you know, virtual workshops rooms, whatever, but you know, developers are also usually not the chattiest of people to kind of like break the ice. And so that is, I think, a very real problem for a lot of events. Because we're leveraging the existing assets of the Platform Engineering community, right? So we already have something like 13,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel. We already have 12,000 people in the Platform Engineering Slack. You know, PlatformCon really becomes a boost on top of a already really healthy baseline of engagement, right? And so it's just really fun. There's no cold start. People are there every day already, right? And another, by the way, fun sort of like side effect of this format is, you know, again, the conference is 2 days long. And I thought, well, after 2 days, you know, it's over. But actually, because people kept consuming the talks, kept watching the stuff on YouTube, which is there forever, and the speakers are hanging out in the Slack anyways, people just kept starting threads for like 10 or 12 days after the event was over. So that was really cool to see. And I mean, to your question, we're replicating pretty much the same thing, a few small improvements around just some technicalities around the, you know, the streaming setup and the links and so on. In terms of schedule, the, you know, last year we had 2 Q&A sessions, and the first one was just like a little bit too early during the day. People hadn't had enough time to actually consume the content to ask questions. And then especially for sort of like people in, you know, North America, they basically just woken up. And so it was too early. So we decided to just have 1 Q&A for 2 hours later in the late afternoon for Europe and sort of like late morning for US, and really just crunch all the action for the day in those 2 hours. And so I think that should work out better. And I mean, it's bigger and better, right? Like last year we had, I think 7,000 signups, 6,000 attendees just on day one, and on just on the day one stream on YouTube. And to this year, we already crossed 14,000-15,000 signups. And you know, usually, you know, I think we'll probably cross 20,000. And so, expecting something like 15,000 at least attendees. Lot of action. I think one of the crazier metrics to just, you know, to the point of the podcast, really, which is, okay, what's new in platform engineering and how is this growing? You know, last year we had something like 80 talk submissions, and I think we accepted 78. this year we had 500 talk submissions, and we accepted 130. So it's really a 6x on the, you know, just the amount of interest and inbound in terms of talks. Lots of great sponsors. You know, we have really, you know, Docker, Google, really big folks kind of coming in and partnering on the event, and really some of the best speakers. So it's exciting, and I think is a really good sort of thermometer, if you will, for seeing what's the temperature in platform engineering, and I think it's pretty hot.
Fantastic. And Luca, I think that's a good place to end for today. And we'll just remind everyone. So again, link is in the show notes for PlatformCon. And the dates are June 8th and 9th, if I remember correctly. Is that right,
yes.
Luca? Okay. So, yep. And it is virtual event. So folks go
free
sign
as
up.
Well.
Yes. And free. Yes, very much. Let's mention that as well. And free. So everyone go sign up and learn more about this. We certainly are happy to partner with Luca and all of the organizers to hopefully get everyone educated on this out there. So with that, Luca, I'm going to say thank you very much for your time this week. And as always, everyone out there, thank you for listening. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review, tell a friend, and help us grow the community overall. And so with that, I'm going to wrap up for this week, and we will talk to everyone next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.